There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Ad News podcast. I'm sitting here in Cannes Lion with Lucy Jameson and Nils Leonard from Grey at London. Later this week, Nils, you're on stage with Iggy Pop, the godfather of punk. So that's a good place to start. So why Iggy, and how did that come about, and what are you going to talk to him about?
Yeah, Grey have a history of these music seminars, and they've been, you know, pretty good by and large. But I think the interesting thing about them is when they really, really chime with the crowd. And actually, a lot of the time, people can interview people here in the celebrities, and they just miss the fact that there's all of us wanting something relevant to take away. So wanted to try and do that. I think, you know, you've watched diversity make a rise in our industry, but I think age is the next issue to tackle, I think, and it's really interesting.
It's always focused on sort of the gender issue, yep. Which is a huge one, but there's all kinds of other diversity that doesn't really even get talked about yet.
Yeah, well, I think we've all just gone on a learning as well, haven't we? You know, chasing people that we think are going to change our industry, and we've gone to youth, and I think absolutely... that's important, but I think there's so many people who've seen so much change already and have so much to offer. And in our industry, the crazy thing is you're old at 45, and it's like,
well,
pretty
only 5% of the UK industry is over 45, so it's quite a terrifying
statistic. It's probably even less than that in Australia. Australia's a very young market.
So it's terrifying, and I don't think we all go off like the elves to a different country in Lord of the Rings. If you look at Iggy, guy's almost 70, just had a US number one album, just recorded with Josh Homme, the guy from the Arctic Monkeys, pretty much two of the coolest people on the planet. You know, without paying them, like a weird producer, they've drawn to him. And I think that talent and how he rolls, and I think really the ferocity with which he still contributes to culture is inspiring. So I'm hoping that people will take that from it. Of course, I could just get mercilessly pulled apart on stage by a very wise man.
We're all looking forward to Nils asking how Iggy is still alive.
I'm pretty interested in the answer, because it seems to be defying all logic there.
That's it. That was kind of the subject of the poem, really, which was having him contribute to that, reading Dylan Thomas's Rage Against the Dying Light was pretty much...
Yeah,
that's what it was about.
So, I mean, that's a very kind of ragey and angry sort of poem, and the video that's kind of come about for that is quite sort of atmospheric. Yeah. So, is that kind of rage and that kind of passion, I guess, isn't something that you see an awful lot of in the industry at the moment? I mean, do you think that's something that's sort of missing?
Yeah, I do. I think it's the key to change. I think that frustration and that anger at the way things are is what these things aren't. We've always talked about that at Grey London, but for sure, I think unless you have a bit of that ferocity, my take on it is that you really won't push things forward as fast as they can. And I think that Iggy living the way he does. Someone said to me yesterday he has very young values in a very old body. The idea that these things are attached to youth, which I think is really, really interesting. But, you know, I think our industry needs more of that. I think it's very comfortable... and a bit fat, and it needs to go at itself a bit. So yeah, I think it is missing.
Do you think you see enough of that, either of you, from what's here at Cannes? I mean, Cannes gets bigger every year. There's a lot of interesting stuff on the programme. There's a lot of stuff that you kind of think, oh, why is that relevant to this audience? What's its purpose? Do you think that there's enough of that really kind of boundary pushing stuff? Or
I think it's all quite polite, actually. I mean, because I think it is a, you know, everyone's going to say it, but it is a big kind of money-making machine, and you want to have stuff that appeals to everybody, and that sort of tends to take the rough edges off stuff, and that's, that makes it more boring. So, I don't know, I don't think there is. I think there's more crazy stuff going on at some of the other festivals, honestly. we've always laughed about we should go to Burning Man and go and do some other stuff like that instead. So I kind of think that would be quite interesting. Because it does feel a bit formulaic now. Yeah. It's just got bigger and bigger.
I think it's hard. I think it's like an industry that's been given permission to sort of massage itself. Somewhere in the middle there is some good stuff.
Yeah.
And there are some people trying to show you things that you've never seen before. And, you know, there is a bit of that, but it's so lost in the scale. That's the hard thing. So you have to come really wanting to find something. Yeah. Otherwise it's very easy to spend 5 days wondering what the fuck we're all doing.
I think increasingly a load of people we know actually, you do back-to-back meetings and you don't really even get to see anything much at the Palais. That would be all the baby creatives who go and see that.
I think one thing actually, the one thing that Ken does have, which I don't think we use enough, is it actually really draws clients, right? Mm. So it's the one festival you're probably sat with the majority of the world's largest and most important brands, and still you somehow feel like we're not taking full advantage of that. And you know, but you know, if you talk about that collision of people and the creativity and all these minds that are here, it does feel like it's hit and miss still, depending on what you can get out of it.
It'd be nice to inspire them to kind of go, what else could we be doing? And I'm not sure. I'm not sure that really is truth of actually finding the space to do something really different that is actually something people care about and something people in the real world wouldn't find annoying. I mean, we were all talking about the terrorist threat.
Yeah, they upped security this year. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that seems like a really hard-to-believe kind of thing.
Well, we were all sort of saying, isn't it weird? I just think the rest of the world wouldn't care if we all got blown up. They'd probably be quite happy.
Yeah.
And it would be quite nice to work in an industry where people didn't feel like that about it.
That's true. I mean, that's quite a damning kind of thing to say.
Just blow us all up.
For anyone listening, there's sort of increased security at Cannes this year because of some reports of terrorist threats and bomb threats, which is a really serious thing to happen. And to kind of feel like, would anyone be upset, or would anyone really be that bothered if the advertising industry was targeted, is quite a damning thing on an industry.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's another boring stat. I will always know the stats, he won't. that in the kind of early 90s, over 30% of people in the UK preferred the ads to the programmes that they were around, and now that's around 2%. Mm. And you just kind of go, I mean, part of it, I'm sure, is because there's more ads and shitter ads and
better telly.
Yeah. But it's a kind of double whammy.
Yeah, that's an interesting stat.
Yeah, it's just a bit scary.
A client once asked me a question, which is, how do we go from being a company that sells stuff to people to being a company that people want to exist? Which I thought was an amazing question. I'll tell you what, it's a really good question if you ask it as an ad agency.
Mm.
Because you just go, hang on a minute, we are like these weird, behind-the-scenes, perverted advisors whispering in our clients' ears. And there is an opportunity for us to be known in the wider world for what we do. So you're right, Lucy's completely right, which is, you know, first of all they'd say, who got blown up? And then they'd say, oh. So it's kind of frustrating, and I think the opportunity is there, though, isn't it? To get more of our clients and move them on and educate them, but actually, just as agencies, I think we should have a bit more pride and zest for it all.
I guess it's pride and kind of purpose, isn't it? Mm. And it's kind of the purpose, but not a kind of forced sort of, you know, charity angle, but having a real purpose as to what your brand and your business stands for. And I think that's it's that sort of long-termism that I think is maybe not as highly regarded as perhaps it used to be. I mean, is that something that you kind of deal with your kind of current clients with a lot? I mean, how are you kind of approaching that with who you work for?
What's the question?
And how they make their brands that people care about, or have a purpose that stands for something that's more than just throwing an ad on telly?
God, it's the constant question, isn't it? I mean, I was speaking to a few clients yesterday about it, and I think the truth is you have to put things into the world that actually contribute now. And it's not a choice between advertising and that. You have to do it all.
There is a bit of an opportunity, because I feel like we are going through a bit of a sea change. You've got all the stuff like ad blockers, all of the kind of different things going on, which mean it's never been easier to ignore or avoid advertising. So I do think we've got an opportunity to say to clients, you've got to do things differently, and now is the time you've got to start doing it. You can't wait any longer just to bore people with sort of, you know, telling them stuff about your product that they don't want to know. So I feel like that's an opportunity, and we've got to seize it.
Mm.
So we do talk a lot to clients when they come in the door about, right, what's your ambition? What's not just your commercial ambition, but what's your cultural ambition? What are you going to do in culture that means people to pay attention, take notice. So from the very first time somebody walks in the agency, they will get that spiel, and they will get it relentlessly. And sometimes it sticks.
Do clients get that, or is it...
There's quite a lot of evidence that it's true. So
I think clients share our panic. There's a quote on the wall at our place, which is "The woods are burning" from Death of a Salesman. No, but it really, what we're referring to is the state of the landscape and how people feel about advertising. So I think there is a shared sense of slight panic that our clients have. The best ones tend to have it. It's what we do about it, I think, that's the hard thing. And I think the clients realise it as well, which is a weird and noble thing, that they can put things in the world people might actually like and want outside of their product is a revelation still.
Yeah. Mm. And so last year, Grey had a pretty good year at Cannes in terms of the awards.
We have to talk about this.
We do. Yeah. We have to touch on it. We are here in Cannes. So what my question isn't really what's happening this year. My question is, what was the impact that had on the agency from last year, and how that kind of recognition for some of that work and what you've been doing kind of drives you forward and impacts what you've been doing over the last 12 months?
I mean, I guess for us, it does come back to that quote a bit. You sort of go, okay, Grey always had that feeling of being a bit of an underdog agency. It was never kind of, you know, top tier historically. And now we kind of feel like we are, so we've got to figure out what the next battle is, and we've set ourselves up actually to go after, and we've talked really publicly about it, we want to go after people like IDEO, Thomas Heatherwick, whoever it might be, Pixar, people who actually are doing interesting stuff beyond our industry. And we've also set ourselves the big kind of goal of, if possible, 40% of our revenue coming from sources other than payment by hours, which is super difficult, but it is kind of going, right, okay, the model's got to change, we've got to do things differently. So for us, in a way, it was sort of like, okay, we've done that, what's next? Because if you're just going after, let's repeat it again.
Well, we went, really, we sort of talked about ambition, and I think a lot of agencies can make trophies or awards their year's ambition or whatever when they have their company meetings. What was interesting to us was we had a great year, but we almost ticked every box. So we won the IPA, DNAD, we're on Contagious's most, you know, sort of
Euro-F.
Yeah, the Euro-F is. And I think it was really, really interesting to the point where we were contending, and we stopped and we said to ourselves, okay, what's the next benchmark? And the reason we're talking about people like Heatherwick or Channel 4 is the next benchmark, I think, are the briefs, right? Not the awards, they're a byproduct. So we want to do the Champions League opening ceremony. We want to do the Olympic torch. We want to do the US electorate campaign, you know? And I kind of sat going, those things, if you can end up in that conversation, that's the sign of having actually moved on.
That's really kind of elevating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beyond
yeah.
advertising. But what you're talking about in terms of remuneration is hugely sort of interesting for everyone, because everyone's trying to figure out how you get paid, because margins are squeezed everywhere.
Yeah.
There's just less ways to make profit in the old-fashioned way. How do you go about doing that? Because it's a difficult thing to try and put in place. And how do you change that relationship you have with clients? And how do you contractually figure that out?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, a lot of our learnings have come out of Volvo Life Paint, because we are now, we now have a licensing deal with Albedo, who's the Swedish startup who we kind of work with to get that product off the ground. And so we get a pound for every can of Life Paint now.
Okay.
Didn't start out that way. It completely didn't, so let's be kind of clear about that. But what it has done is made us see, okay, if we can figure out a way of licensing or some kind of deals that actually will work in a different way, that we actually get paid in the long term ideas and thinking.
It's about creative commerciality. So there's a guy in that case study who goes, have you ever seen your idea become a $1 million seller? And I sat and was looking at that and biting my fucking lip. Like, well, it hasn't, has it? And I mean, it was famous, and we sort of learned from that. And I think the problem is that agencies are either dealing currently in the fiction that is IP, still thinking they're going to sit in a room and jam on a product that the world doesn't need, or lost in getting paid for our time. And there's a whole thing in the middle, if you look at the entertainment industry or the publishing industry, about how you get paid from the licensing to publishing. And we are just not empowered enough to have those conversations. And the last thing to add to that is, I think that there is a temptation in our industry to move towards theory, that the real money lies in advising and being theorists, and I think it lies in making and owning, which can feel the opposite. So the more you own, the more you have actually created something, as opposed to farmed it out. the more likely you are to actually get paid in a different way, because you've put something into the world that is yours, mm-hmm. as opposed to something.
And I guess that's more a mindset thing, and then it is a creative kind of capability thing, because the industry's always kind of
I disagree with that, because I think that the temptation is creatives as well. The first thing an agency says whenever it comes up with an idea is, who should we get to do this for us? And it's a production company, or it's a tech company, or it's a whatever, and I think we reach out and we do that, and it makes us dependent. And until it's a creative thing, so I think the best people in our place are learning constantly. They can edit, they can code, they can build. You know, there's a team at our place that turned and showed me something in a review, which wasn't just a film with an idea that they might make. It had a rendered end frame with a logo that was spinning around. And I just thought to myself, this is incredible, because this team don't need anybody else. And if the whole agency is buzzing like that, that would be a very powerful place to be. Mm.
Yeah.
But I think it is that thing where we're just constantly, every time we win a new client, we look at what the contract, and we're not there by any means.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
But we do look at contract. Can we get away from signing away our IP? What can we put in? Can we use the IPA contract? Can we kind of create some wiggle room in there for ourselves? And we're not always getting it right, but at least every time we're now going in really consciously with
eyes
that
open
as,
about the, the possibilities.
Yeah,
because I think that's the thing as well, because what's being produced and sort of developed is so different from what it used to be. The old contracts just don't cover it anymore.
You just have to be more brazen as well. I think we've put the gloves on as an industry, and we're scared to have these conversations, and we've forgotten that what we do is precious and can matter. And I don't know, you know, the important thing to say is some of this doesn't market to clients. Okay, because they love it like it is. Some of them, you know, they get to pay us for our time, and they get whatever they get. They add a zero to their year. I think it markets to talent for sure. But the thing to say about a client relationship is, if we get it right, we share risk.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of those things mean that we hop in a bed with them and we say, right, we're going to go at this together, and if it fails, we both fail, as opposed to they've invested in something and walk away. So it's not all, you know, it's not all upside for the agencies.
Yeah, that's true. It's ever evolving. So we are obviously in Cannes. We've talked a little bit about the kind of awards and your presentation next week, but we talked about sort of the things that are here and whether that sort of inspiration is still here. The other thing I want to talk about that is the whole ad tech industry that's kind of grown up here. I mean, the whole every kind of sponsor seems to be technology, and that's just the wholesale change from how Cannes originally was. What are your kind of views on the role that ad tech plays here, and whether it's a kind of a force for good and a reflection of where the industry's going, or if actually it's a kind of dilution of what it should be about and a distraction?
Good question, please.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt I think technology is amazing and what we can do with it, and what we're already doing. Some crazy stuff. We're looking at really interesting things with our head of creative tech, things we'd have never done before. Stuff, little things like silly virtual kittens for McVitie's, fun stuff, more serious stuff for some things we're looking at the Science Museum. So I love the fact that technology can be really, really creative. What I'm not so in love with is that I feel the ad tech presence isn't really talking about that side of the business. A lot of it is just the kind of race to the bottom in terms of how can we make things more efficient, kind of how can we serve more automated stuff, how can we treat everything like direct mail, direct response. And for me, that's a bit depressing. So I would like to see not just the kind of ad tech in that sort of side of things, which is, I feel, where most of the current conversation at Cannes is, but the incredible things we can do with technology that are super, super creative. And I haven't seen as much of that from those guys this week.
Follow the money, and then you ask questions of it. You know, and you ask questions about why they're the ones sponsoring everything here at the show. And it's revealing. And I think the thing to remember about it, or the scary thing, I think, is while, you know, some of the stuff we can do with tech is inspiring, you're absolutely right. The majority of those companies aren't in it for that reason. And therefore, don't market to the talent. And I think, actually, first and foremost, this is a festival about creative talent. The people that come here want to be inspired and want to win. And I think that the scary thing is, if it goes that way more and more and more, ultimately people will switch on.
I think it is definitely. Those guys are here spending loads of money so they get access to clients they don't care about.
No.
You guys.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's kind of, it's almost, how do you turn the clock back or wind that back and kind of get back to what it should be about?
Or flip it. I mean, I don't think it is about going back, because I think technology is incredible. But how do we get discussions about what it could do, not just about money?
Honestly, I think creativity wins. I think you can, you know, I think it's like anything, you know, like in football, money came in and then the football came in and then ultimately sport wins. I think the same is true here. Creativity is going to win out. All right, people. That's what people want. That's the magic. That's the thing they'll pay a premium for, and it will swing around. You know, and tech will play a part in the right way and the wrong way. But I'm an optimist. I think people will follow talent and creativity and the magic, and those guys will learn to get out of the way or help.
And so, from the kind of the program on this week, either Cannes Lions or Cannes Entertainment or Cannes Innovation, what are the kind of things that sort of pique your interest that you think actually do capture that sort of creativity and real inspiration that you're kind of looking for?
I go back to the academies, really, every time. I mean, I think that's where you see the really, really interesting stuff. I mean, I love watching social right now. Like, I am putting out almost 10 to 15, like, sort of semi-fires a day caused by, like, students or kids or people just wanting to make stuff happen. So great little groups on Twitter or surveys that they put together. I mean, and they're behaving like publishers. They're behaving like you guys. And they don't give a shit about the programme or the speakers on. And I kind of quite like that in a way, you know. And they're just trying to basically make this week work for them. And you're seeing a load of stuff there. I think every time the youth academies tend to put out something of interest and raise sort of interesting issues. I think there's a few things flying around that are of interest. But that's what always makes me really excited, is just the behaviours of people using the festival for their own means, you know, particularly creatives. I love that. Mm-hmm. Sort of taking over.
Yeah. Lucy, what's your highlights or sort of things that you think are interesting?
Sorry, I'm kind of going, I don't know.
There's a lot on the programme, to be honest.
There is, there's so much on the programme.
I think that's the thing that I find the most frustrating, is kind of, there's so much on.
You can't possibly see all of it.
You can't see all of it, and you have to constantly make these decisions about what to miss. And it's always hit or miss with any kind of conference or any kind of event that you go to. The things that might sound really good might be flat, and the things that sort of you just stumble across turn out to be the most interesting kind of strange thing from the Netherlands that you've never heard of before. And I think that's kind of part of the appeal, I guess, but it does make it difficult.
It is. It's harder. I mean, I think it's harder for me in my role that I end up just largely with clients. And a lot of it is client lunches, client dinners, client kind of whatever. And actually really just don't even... I looked at my calendar and went, I've got about an hour free to go to the festival. Whoopee! So I have to admit, I haven't even spent that much time looking at it. Because I'm kind of like, okay...
There's some interesting stuff at the festival, I think.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is you are every year holding your breath, hoping for a piece of work that's going to redefine the industry. And so I love the Swedish number thing.
That's excellent.
You know, and
that got a Grand Prix last night, didn't it?
That's the right shape of work. It's the right relationship in the world. And I kind of look at that and go, hopefully that's going to open everyone's eyes in the way that great work in the past has done.
Yeah, great.
And it's moved the industry. And so I think that whether you turn up at some of the seminars or not, that sense of everyone hoping for a piece of work that's going to move us on is always evident.
Are there any other sort of things from the last sort of couple of months or last year that you think will kind of that have that kind of game changing sort of really inspirational magic?
Go on,
so that's definitely the piece from from our side that I think we've all spent more time talking about, more time being envious of.
Well, that's it, right? It's always kind of it's work that that you wish you'd made, or ideas that you wish you'd come up with. That kind of.
I was talking to someone last night about TV, right? And I think it is. We love different shapes of work. It's what we're known for at our place, but. There hasn't been a game-changing telly ad in the way that I think Sony Balls didn't have a narrative, right? You remember when that dropped? Everyone was like, what the fuck is this? It's an ad.
It doesn't
have a story. It doesn't have characters. Doesn't have any of that stuff we're supposed to want. Guide to Modern Storytelling and all that stuff. And it reinvented stuff. And I think Guerrilla did the same, actually, in its period. I don't think we've seen an ad like that in a while. And I think the ads, I'm just going to put it out there and be slightly naughty. Yeah. I think the ads that are going to win this year are just going to be ads. And they're going to be the sort of ads that we know and understand, not the sort of work that is going to move us on again. I think that's kind of frustrating to me as a creative. I don't think TV has seen a revolution in a while. But I think everywhere else it's blossoming. I mean, you look at McWhopper, obviously. But what I love about that is there's no bullshit around it. It's a PR idea.
Yeah.
And we're getting our heads around, as an industry, our relationship with the world, literally, in terms of, you know, on that coalface of fame and culture, is perfect. And I think
it's
that should teach agencies everything.
PR.
Yeah. And I think that should teach agencies everything. I mean, that's literally one concept placed into market in one part in the world that's just gone rampant.
It took a couple of years to get them to say yes to it. There was a lot of going back and forth for the Y&R guys in New Zealand for that, but they managed to get it across and go global.
I love this. So LifePaint took 18
true.
Months.
Yeah.
LifePaint took 18 months. The Swedish number took 2 years. I think the best stuff does take that time because it feels like the newest risk. And I think that's a theme in our industry we don't talk enough. Yeah.
I think that's interesting as well, back to your point about the longevity and short-termism. I mean, we all know those ideas. You have to sit with them for a while with you and the client. It just takes the right time for it suddenly to lift up, and you can't do that if you've got marketing directors who are going in and out in 18 months and agency people who are doing the same. It just doesn't happen.
I mean, that's a big thing, isn't it? The tenure of a CMO or a marketing director is getting ever shorter, and there's ever more pressure inside businesses for sort of the direct return, which, you know, if an idea is going to take 2 years to even kind of think about and get across the line, then it's much less likely to happen.
That's true with the kind of ING thing for Amsterdam, isn't it, as well, the last Rembrandt. That, you know, again, was another amazing thing, really interesting. That took 2 years as well, didn't it?
But again, back to optimism, you can look at that two ways, right? One is, damn, we can't build these long-term ideas. The other is, if people are starting to develop a mindset where they're coming in for a short period and want to smash it, you would love to believe they're more likely to take risks to get great work out of it. No, but I'm kind of in that. You know, the reason clients call a pitch is they want new thinking and new energy. That's why pitching happens. And so if you've got new marketing directors coming in and out, I would love to believe that they are filled with that zest.
Does that seem to be the way that it plays out?
Sometimes.
Although I would say that most of those things where we've done our best bits of work actually have been the result of a solid relationship, which is a longer term one.
But it has been about an ambitious, like, say, LifePaint came from.
Super ambitious slide.
A pitch, you know, the original thinking came from how do we have, we've got this relationship with safety with the world, and how do we modernise that? It's a dusty relationship, and how do we make it not dusty? Mm. And that's where that came from, and I think they do come from a place of ambition, so I don't know, just trying to find some good.
Well, also, you kind of figure out, it's, as you say, it's not a choice of doing one or the other. You churn around your hard-working, short-term stuff, which is going to do the trading bit of it for you, and then you figure out the other big stuff that's going to change the way people feel about the brand. And
because are there lessons
stuff
in there? I mean, the more of this that gets out in the world, I'm hoping that some clients, hopefully somewhere, will be hearing what we're talking about, right? 1,700 emails, 18 months on LifePaint, sold out in 24 hours, globally famous. So you kind of go, okay, if there's enough of these case studies, the Swedish number and all those things, there should be an ambition to do that sort of work. And it should get quicker, so it should make us all better.
More people coming in the door, certainly at our place, client-wise, asking for that kind of work,
and
which
I guess
is the big challenge.
That's what everyone's on the same page, that we want the industry to be better, we want the work to be better, the clients want the results to be better. That's the optimistic win-win kind of scenario to land.
Someone asked a great question to me yesterday, the thing I was talking about. They said, you're right, Nils, that's awesome, and obviously I appreciate the risk that you're talking about LifePaint. I appreciate the risk that they took when they originally launched it. How do you quantify that? How do you measure the success of ideas like this? I think that's the next question, which is, if ad tech companies are going to do something half useful for people in our industry, one thing they could do is help us quantify cultural impact. They could help us do that in a way that's powerful for our clients. Because, you know, there's no doubt about it, LifePaint was hugely successful for Volvo. How that worked, how that shifted mindsets or became
it will take a long time to play out, because that's a 7-year cycle.
It's not sort of a £1 of investment equals a, you know, 4.3 back or whatever.
And it's not equally, it's,
well,
not,
it's not in the short term. I think you could do it easily actually over the long term, but we'll have to wait another 7 years to be able to show.
Well, that's the thing, right? There's no awards that do a kind of 10-year effectiveness
the
study.
The IPA does.
Is it 10 years?
You can do it. You can spin it that way so if you want to. Sorry, I'm so good. You can do it if you want to.
Well, that credit where it's due. Then that's you know, because it's within a year ad cycle or
which
a year annual cycle. How do you measure that?
Stupid. Sorry, I shouldn't say that, but it is. It's just stupid because a lot of our work just works on
different
your relationship with a brand grows over a generation. I mean, a lot of the brands I'm fond of are the ones I grew up with, and that's it's not over kind of minutes and months, it's over decades.
I also think there is a bit of a clash, right? So the worry with ideas like this is if you're going to dismiss it as a brand builder, you go, these ideas are PR ideas, and they're just like little hot bits of mess. And actually, that's not true. Like, the behaviours, they're the behaviours of a brand, right? They're how it acts, its body language. So everybody goes, if Whopper is one of those things, you can dismiss it as a PR idea. If they do enough of that sort of work, it won't be PR.
Yeah,
it'll be how they roll. It'll be what they do.
That'll be them.
It becomes their tone and their personality.
But that's tough to get investment in.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's a bit like Paddy Power in the UK. Is like that, right? They're very sort of...
Or was. I don't
was.
Think
very kind of quick fire, very deliberately kind of contentious.
Yeah. Tactical.
Yeah. Tactical stuff. But that became their brand message. It didn't need...
They became a social commentator, didn't they? I mean, you know, and they didn't have a license to be, not really. But that was a shift. But it takes repeated behaviour, it takes properly shared ambition. To Lucy's point about cultural ambition, that client and the agency both went, okay, we're in for it. So every week there was a commentary on this episode. Yeah, it was inspiring.
Well, I think there's a lot to kind of wrap up for Cam, but I know you've both got busy schedules, so I will leave it there. And thank you so much for having a bit of time with me, and enjoy the rest of Cam, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.